Ready, down, put, 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 put.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
He is our friend. He is our teammate. He is Jason Wilde. He joins us three times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Good morning, Jason.
I'm sorry, who is this?
This is Gabe Neitzel. How are you
Keith.
Doing, buddy? Yeah, Keith.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, Keith's son. I remember you. It's great to have you back, buddy.
Yeah, you take one trip to Scotland. One trip. That's all it takes. Everyone forgets.
I don't think it was one. That's an annual event. You've been doing it for, what, 3 years?
So the craziest thing, Chew, you mentioned that. So the last course we played, I had played the first time that I went over in 2022. I randomly was assigned the same caddy.
Wow. That's kind of weird. Like, Did he remember you?
So, like, you introduce yourself. We're walking up to the putting green. I'm going, man, this guy is really familiar. And as I'm hitting some putts on the putting green before the first tee, I go, I had this. His name's Kenny. I'm like, I had Kenny last time. I know I had Kenny. And I walk up, and I hand him my putter, and Kenny goes, Gabe, I think I had you last time you were here. So, yeah, I ended up just randomly getting assigned the same caddy. And yeah, we had a good time in our last round of the Castle course over in Scotland. So that was...
Think about how many people... Kenny, does he have a thick Scottish accent?
Oh, of course he does. Yes, of course he does. Yes.
Oh, I love it. Think about how many people he caddied for in the last 2 years. Were you wearing your, like, ESPN Wisconsin print pants?
So I had them on this time, but the first time I went over, Jason, I did not, because I famously, my luggage did not arrive. So, like, the bright clothes that I typically would have worn, I did not have the first time, but I did have this time around.
But, Jason, he's a lefty. That's like a left.
That's
how
true.
Many left-footed punters do you know? You know?
Oh, so you're thinking his left-handedness allowed Kenny to remember him better.
Yes, totally. Jason, what was the dust up before the game?
Jair Alexander hates Stephon Diggs, and Stephon Diggs hates Jair Alexander.
There's and a history both, there?
Yeah, and they're just both, I mean, they're both troublemakers, right? They're both trash talkers. They're, I mean, not, you know, not like you who honored the game every time he set foot on the field. These guys, I mean, they just do. This is just what they do. And Jair, I mean, if you go back and look, I was looking at the NFL Plus copy last night. Like, there are plays that he has absolutely nothing to do with, and he's like meandering over to trash talk like Tank Dell. And he had nothing to do with the incomplete pass. He was just, I mean, he had as much to do with it as I did, and he's talking trash to Tank Dell. So look, Keith, that's who he is. But I'll say this, after the guy that he was last year, when he was miserable in the scheme and he was injured and he got himself suspended, you know, if you're a Packers fan, this is the Jair you want. You don't like him if you're a Texans fan or a Vikings fan, but with him, you know, brimming with confidence, he's got a pick six earlier this season. Like, this is the Jair you want, and it's a little obnoxious in my opinion, but if he's feeling it like that, that's obviously good news for Packers fans.
Jason, it seemed like Matt LaFleur at least downplayed after the game a little bit the interceptions, but I've got to assume that there is a happy medium, right, of, yes, he's going to throw interceptions. Yes, he's going to throw more interceptions than Aaron Rodgers did because, well, Aaron's the best in NFL history in avoiding that. But there's got to be a happy medium between, yeah, he's going to throw more and leading the league and having 8 through 5 games.
Yeah, I thought yesterday, for example, and I think you're 1,000% right, that he was trying to downplay them. And I get that, right? I mean, he is not, just like he was with Rashawn Gary when he was facing questions about Rashawn's lack of production. Like, he's not going to be hypercritical of any of his players, much less his star players, publicly. Now, he does say things that are critical, and you then have to do a little bit of homework. For example, The interception where Love overshoots Watson on that first down play, right? It was Watson, right, that he overthrew. He mentions that we got edged, and the pressure coming from Love's right causes him to fall away as he's throwing the ball, and that causes him to sail it. Well, you know what that is? That's, you know, poor, thinly veiled criticism of Zach Tom, who got beat on that play by Danielle Hunter, and that's what leads to him being pressured. But I personally would say, it doesn't matter that he was pressured. Quarterbacks get pressured all the time. He sailed the ball. Like, that's, and I think Jordan would be honest and say, look, I got to do better on these. I can't be throwing this many interceptions. It's great that I'm taking risks, and it's great that I'm pressing the boundaries as a quarterback, but I still have to make some better decisions. I think that's reasonable. I think that's how Jordan feels. Again, you know, I talked about it last week after I talked to him on Thursday after practice. You know, I totally get that this is part of his development. I think it's a good thing, by the way. Like, you know, every quarterback, as LaFleur said this, has to go through this process of figuring out what works and figuring out what's basically a bridge too far in terms of risk-taking. You know, I don't think the first interception was a risk, right? Like, he locked in on the receiver.
Yeah.
And the guy fell off of Romeo and was there to deflect the pass that was intended for Wicks. I mean, that was good defense. And if there's a criticism there, it's that, obviously, you know, Love didn't see that was a possibility with that. And LaFleur did. You're right, Gabe. Like, LaFleur took the blame for that, talking about the design of the play. Well, all right, fine. You could take some blame for that. Maybe that's why I was yawning. And that's fine, but you have to be realistic and also say, hey, my quarterback's got to make some better decisions here. It's not getting us beat yet, but it could, like it did, frankly, in San Francisco.
Jason, why is Christian Watson's production so minimal? I mean, if you look at targets, you got Jaden Reed, 38, Romeo Doubs, 34, Kraft, 30, Devontae Wicks, 38, and Christian Watson, 14.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would say that it's extenuating circumstances, right? I mean, he was the one guy in the one Malik Willis game who played 41 snaps and got zero targets. Okay, we're seven games in, so now we have to wipe away that game as a being skunked. Then there's the Minnesota game where he is targeted. Unfortunately, it's an interception, and he gets bent backwards and awkwardly, and again, dodged a bullet because it could have been way, way, way worse. But that's at the end of the first quarter. So now he misses the next three quarters of that game. And a game, frankly, where they were throwing the ball all over the yard because they got down 28-0. I'm guessing he probably would have had some targets during the final three quarters of that game. And then, you know, the game he misses because of the ankle injury, now you're up to 2.75 games where he's not even on the field, or might as well not be on the field. So now, out of seven games, that's a lot of time to not be targeted, right? And even when he came back last week or 2 weeks ago, now you know, he was there, but he wasn't fully healthy and fully a part of the offensive scheme. I mean, he was a decoy for a lot of it. So you start to pile up those games where he's not fully involved. Now, I would argue that, obviously, yeah, Sunday, you would have liked to have seen him targeted more. And I don't think that Christian is going to not show up for work on Wednesday. But if we're being honest, if anybody could say, you know, I'd like to be more involved, Matt, could you find – it's him. I mean, I you know, and I'm glad that Romeo seems to be in a better place. I talked to him one-on-one after the game for a little bit. I know he even did a group interview after that, which I wasn't expecting. But again, this is just the vagaries of this offense. Like, 1 week, Wicks gets 13 targets and Romeo gets mad. And then in the two games he's been back, what has he been targeted? 18 times in those two games, if my math is correct. This is how this offense works. And if you're not able to handle that, which I think Christian Watson is, but if you're not able to handle that, yeah, you're going to get frustrated. It's not like the old days with you where it was just Free and Brooks and you and Jackson and Dorsey out of the backfield, and that was it. And Terry Mickens got four targets a season. It's just not the same.
Jason, one of the things we talked about yesterday, only 12 carries for Josh Jacobs. Did have five receptions, so I think you have to factor that in. 17 touches. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of where they want to keep him early in the season to make sure he's healthy and ready to go for late season since they were so good last year because Aaron Jones was healthy and getting a lot of touches late in the season?
No, they want it to be higher. And LaFleur talked about, I understand that when Josh Jacobs has 32 carries in a game that Love misses, we all kind of increase our expectations for how much he's going to get the football. But the bottom line is that their offense, like we didn't spend a lot of time on this obviously yesterday, but their offense was not very good, right?
Correct.
And that's a good Texans defense. So, you know, they turned it over three times as a team. They have one possession where they give it away on special teams. They got two other possessions where Love throws interceptions. And then they have five more possessions where they go three and out. So if you're trying to get Jacobs 20 to 25 touches, which I think is their target, LaFleur said yesterday at least 20. So I think, you know, between the run game and the pass game, they would love to have him in that 23, 24, 25 range. The fact that he ends up with 12 carries, and they were a good 12 carries. They weren't the grind of the whatever he had the previous week. He didn't have a ton of carries the previous week either. I think that's a function of, and LaFleur admitted it, he did not get into a good rhythm play calling wise either. Like D'Amico Ryans and their defensive staff did a really good job kind of throwing him off. So I don't think that's a function of we don't want to wear him out. We don't want to give him the ball too much. I believe Matt LaFleur when I hear him say that it's a function of we can't have five three and outs. You got it. If you pick every time you pick up a first down, that's another first or second down play where he can get the football. And if you go three and out as often as they did, that's how you end up with a guy running very effectively but not getting the ball enough.
Jason, do you think Halfley's resigned to the fact that he knows he's not going to be able to create pressure with the down four? He's got to do it in other ways, and he's got to come up with game plans like this? Because there were a handful of fire zones, which I hadn't seen him do a lot of this season, and there were some, you know, I wouldn't call them exotic blitz, but some creative blitzes. Uh-huh. Is he going to have to come up with a game against good teams, I'm saying? Is he going to have to come up with game plans like this week in and week out when they play someone decent?
I don't know if we still have that hotkey button where, like, the angels sing and it's, Chewy was right! Chewy was right!
Oh, we got
you
it,
think,
Jason.
You think Chewy would ever let us get rid of that?
I'll quit.
I don't know. I
that was a part of his last negotiation.
Yeah.
We have to play it so many times per week.
I'm familiar with his negotiating tactics. I'm going to have him go to bat for me next time when I'm looking for a raise. Chewy, you're a 1,000,000% right. And look, I think this is one of the things that I personally really like about Jeff Halfley. Like, and I asked LaFleur a question about this yesterday because, to me, the mark of a good defensive coordinator is not, hey, we believe in our scheme, we believe in our system, we do what we do, and it's going to work. What I think a good defensive coordinator does is says, okay, this crap ain't working. We got to do something else. And what we saw on Sunday, I don't know about you guys, but I think, and we'll talk to Halfley on Thursday, I think what happened, frankly, was he thought exactly what you thought. We can't get pressure with four. We need to get creative. We need to do more twists and stunts. They definitely did that more. I mean, they had the one where Rashawn Gary starts on the left side, and he went on a walk around the park. Like, he ends up coming from the right side of the formation by the time he starts rushing. He had another one where he kind of came in on somewhat of a delayed blitz. There was a lot of that, but I think he watched the Vikings when they came here and thought, you know what, some of the stuff that Brian Flores does works. Because if you look, I don't know how many times before Sunday I had seen him put eight men up like he did on a couple of those plays, right? And then he doesn't send more than four.
Nope.
He just drops different guys out, and it confuses the offensive line in terms of their declarations of who's blocking who. I don't remember seeing that in training camp. You know, remember when we were hearing about how the front four was eating the offensive line's lunch every day? Like, I don't remember them having to even practice that or work on that. I think that's what I'm eager to ask him, because to me, again, that is the mark of a real, and I'm not speaking of anyone in particular, but maybe sort of I am, that you can't just keep doing what you always do and think you're going to get better results. Sometimes you got to change things up, and you got to listen to your players, and you got to get creative as a coach yourself. And I think that's exactly what he's doing.
Jason, always appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you again on Thursday.
All right, boys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde joins us three times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. The next best round of golf for you is going to be happening at the Wisconsin Country Club. Join me. Do what I did at the Wisconsin Country Club. And I know the golf season is coming to an end, but we've got a simulator out there. So many things that you can still do during the off season. But when you're thinking about golf for next year, you want to play a great golf course that's fun, challenging, tree-lined fairways. You're not going to get sick of playing it. Again, I love it out there. Maybe you're also looking for something in a country club more than just golf. Well, you can always check out the tennis and pickleball courts, the pool with themed Sunday fun days each and every week. So get started today. Visit thewisconsincountryclub.com for membership info. The Wisconsin Country Club, just a fairway away.